Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
This episode is sponsored by R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice, a welcome addition to anyone's sleep routine. Pace Case, if you know me, and you do, you know that I'm working all hours of the day, all hours of the night. So the sleep that I do get has to be very good sleep, and I'm always looking for ways to up my sleep routine. Sometimes I'll read a book to go to sleep. Sometimes
The Bachelor?
That book keeps me very awake. It's very engaging. That never puts me to sleep. I will sometimes just put down my cell phone after a long day of looking at a screen. It's nice to get some time away from the screen. I also will incorporate some R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice. It truly makes you go to sleep a little easier. It's the thing you need to help you drift off into the dreamland.
As more and more people are looking to prioritize sleep, Organic Just Tart Cherry is having a moment thanks to Tart Cherry's potential sleep-related benefits and potential to aid in muscle recovery when you get those gains like clues. We're seeing this in the viral Sleepy Girl Mocktail trend on social media. R.W. Knudsen has a whole lineup of natural juices with zero added sugar, so you can feel good about adding them to your wellness routine. It's all about celebrating those daily wins. Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice is made from tart cherries, which may help you get a better night's sleep because they have natural melatonin.
R.W. Knudsen crushes only 100% real ingredients, so you can crush everything you do. Pick up a bottle at your local grocery store today.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses.
If your wife came up to you and said that some guy told her that she was cute, and then she in turn said that you're cute as well in the real world, if you were to buy me a drink, whatever happens, happens, would you be upset? Man to man, would you be upset?
Me personally?
You personally? Yeah, you fucking would be. And if I would have done the same thing to one of the girls, I'd be the fucking player that's playing her like a fucking fiddle. And I'm not gonna get played, bud, okay? It's not a game. This is my life.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues. And we have a recap for you of Love is Blind Season 3, Episodes 5 and 6. But before we get to that, we must tell you there is a brand new development happening right now in the Game of Roses Patreon. If you've been wondering, how did they start this show? What were the first episodes like? Well, now you can wonder no more. Your curiosity will be satisfied if you go to patreon.com/gameofroses. You're going to get that back catalog.
The first bunch.
Everything up to what you can get right now in our regular feed now exists in our Patreon. The Dark Seeker has painstakingly uploaded every episode into a YouTube channel, and you can go back and listen to everything from literally the first episode, which has a different theme song, which is very strange to hear. I just listened to it this morning.
Wait, it does? What is the theme song?
It was just some weird little thing that I made in GarageBand and tacked onto the beginning of it just so we'd have a little bit of music.
Oh, interesting.
It took, I think, one more episode until we had the theme song that we currently use now. So we had it almost from the beginning, but not quite. And you'll get to hear all of my weird audio experimentations, some episodes that have wall-to-wall music, all kinds of weird stuff. You can go back and enjoy all of that right now on patreon.com/gameroses.
And we also, if you go to that website, you can access our latest Digging Deeper, in which we broke down all of the most important clips from the nation's podcast, all of the auditory tids that you need in your life, patreon.com/gameofroses. You're going to get that back catalog. You're going to get that live shows once a week. You're going to get those Digging Deepers. And yeah, you even might get some ad-free episodes.
Every once in a while, one of those show up in the Patreon. So please head over to that Patreon and join us in the bottom of the pit. You also get access to our Discord, where you can submit screams that we play on Twibbon at the end of the week. But now, let's do what we came here to do, Pace Case.
And now, Pace Case and Bachelor Clues proudly present analysis of play in this week of our beloved game. This is Game of Roses.
Episode 5 of Love is Blind opens. All of our players are still in their honeymoon suites. This is the fantasy suite equivalent to our beloved game. We see a bunch of self-shot video of all the couples as they are experiencing their mornings after and getting into some kind of a routine here. Ultimately, we come to Zanab and Cole. Zanab is watching Cole surf from the beach and she cheers him on as he's pulling off his wetsuit, and she says, "I really enjoy this." They sit down at this picnic, eating some grapes, drinking some booze. She says she liked watching him. He was hot on the surfboard, and she says she won't go into the water, but she will watch him do anything if she has champagne on the beach. Isn't that true of most things? And he asks her if she's having any second thoughts after seeing the other guys. She says, "Not one." Then she asks him the same thing, and he pauses. This is, of course, coming on the heels of him talking to Colleen in the pool the day before. Could be editing this pause. We don't know. But she says, it's the hesitation for me. And this "it's blank for me" is something all the players are saying this season quite a bit. Zanab maybe the most. But he finally says no. He's not having any second thoughts. Raven is too much for him. Alex is not his type. Colleen is happily off with Matt. And Zanab brings up how excited he said he was to meet Colleen. He divulges that the majority of the girls he's dated look like Colleen, but Zanab has the personality he wants, and he admits he never dated anyone physically like her. I still don't know exactly what this means. Is this a race reference? Is this a hair color reference? I don't really know what that means.
It's hard to not see it as a racial thing, and we'll get Zanab's stepmom saying that later, but... And I don't think Cole means it that way. I think he's just like, I think she's hotter, basically. I don't know. But Zanab ITMs that she tries not to be that female who's insecure, but Cole is unfiltered. But we then cut to Colleen and Matt, and they are eating on a boat. And Colleen talks about how it was interesting meeting Brennan and Cole because both of them rejected her. And Matt's like, "Did you talk about that?" And she says that Cole was quieter, but I always knew it was you. That's my guy. This could be the case. It did not seem that way from what we were shown of Colleen's storyline. She seemed pretty devastated when both of these rejections happened. And Matt says the only one he dated was Alexa, and it was BFF vibes. Colleen love level 4s, and Matt asks about when other guys are there or hitting on her in Dallas. And she would be like, "Oh no, I'm taken. I always say I'm sorry I have a boyfriend, and now I won't be lying." And he says their foundation is stronger than that whole deal, referencing his 10-year relationship and marriage that he had before.
I know. I was like, shit.
Damn.
But I mean, I get where he's coming from, because she cheated on him and got pregnant with the dude she was cheating on. So in his mind, that whole thing is zeroed out. Completely worthless, a waste of his time. He's been fucked over. I get where he's coming from. But basically, we see that they're a strong couple. We then get Alexa and Brennan sitting on a beach. She's wearing a giant hat. Brennan expresses that he's still nervous about living with each other in the real world. He says he's not really that messy. She says she's the messy one. They can't have two messy people. And he says he only has about 25 items that he mixes and matches. Alexa divulges that she never wears the same outfit twice. Okay.
There was a girl at my high school who did this, but she was extremely wealthy.
Yeah.
But I also was like, this is disgusting.
I'm sorry. To me, it's like, I don't know. It's not very sustainable. Not a sustainable option.
We learn a little bit later that she might be wealthy. We then see Bartice and Nancy eating some pizza with champagne outside. They're drinking from those signature golden chalices that we see in Love is Blind in every episode. And Nancy admits that she was confused by what was going on between him and Raven. She says Raven is playful, but also she's a little negative. And she says she can't. She's done. Seems like weird editing in this moment. I don't think she actually said this. I think this is some Frankenbitten stuff. But Nancy was surprised that she was at the top of Bartice's list because she's so different from Raven. And Nancy ITMs that Bartice was into Raven's body. But the whole point of this is that the foundation of the relationship is an emotional connection, not a physical one. Bartice then explains to Nancy that he and Raven connected on their fitness similarities. But with Nancy, it was emotional. He couldn't get her out of his gut when he was having a date with Raven. They kiss, and it seems to have brought this conversation back from the brink a little bit here. Mm-hmm. See, he's always kind of going in bad directions in these conversations, then somehow he pulls it out. Or somehow Nancy allows it to be pulled out, I suppose.
He keeps seeming to create obstacles for himself during this process. We then get an interesting all-player date at a swimming pool. We get quick pops of kisses between Colleen and Matt, and then a couple. I didn't know who this was. Did you see who the second one was?
No, it was very fast, but it was just like images of kissing, people jumping in the water, some shots of some asses, shots being imbibed, gold chalices are everywhere. And we finally settle on Nancy and SK having a conversation about how they are both Scorpios. SK tells her that Raven told him she's not an affectionate person, and he told her that he wanted to fall in love with her the Raven way. So he's bringing back this catchphrase, and he basically says, I was down for whatever she wanted to do. SK ITMs that he thinks he and Raven made a lot of progress, and she's getting more comfortable, but they haven't been intimate yet. There's some sexual tension brewing between them, but not having sex doesn't change the way he sees her. So we know that that's going to be a narrative they're setting up, at least in the course of this episode, potentially the next episode, that they have not yet consummated. And we believe they are the only couple at this point to not have done so.
We see a girl chat between Raven, Alexa, and Colleen, where Raven says, it was medium at first with SK, but better every day. She needs him to bring the energy and start to open up, lower those walls. And Alexa spills some tea here, says that sex with Brennan is like 2 minutes. I'm jamming it in, but we're good now. Okay. You're always mic'd. You should always know that.
Raven has a great faceplate in reaction to this. It's kind of like half eye aperture, like, what the fuck did you just say? It was really, really good. She was not my faceplate of the game, but fantastic faceplate from Raven. She actually has some pretty good faceplate all throughout this series. But after this strange admission by Alexa that Brennan, at least in his first iteration of having sex, was doing the two minute jam it in style, Cole then beckons Zainab into the pool. She won't go in. She says she doesn't want to look like a wet dog. Then we see Bartice and Raven talking. Bartice is ITMing that she's beautiful, fit, and gorgeous. He does care about her. They form something special in the pods, and he does care about what she thinks of him still. Then they talk to one another. He asks her if it's weird talking face to face. They say no. She is comfortable. He is comfortable. And he tells her that she is a baddie, and she thanks him for the compliment. Mm-hmm. He says that on paper, they're a perfect match. He explains that his connection with Nancy was different than what he had with Raven, and Raven admits that because they never approach the people, because they each never approach people out in the world, they wait for people to approach them, they would have never walked up to each other in a bar. And Raven ITMs that she's not flattered by what Bartice is saying because he was only talking about her physical appearance. He didn't even mention the pod Raven, which is her mind and their connection. Back to the talk, she says she's reassured in her decision after talking to him. She says SK and her are more realistic and methodical people, and he matches her chiller energy, and they made the right choice for where they are emotionally. She says she and Bartice are so emotionally incompatible. So Bartice is just essentially getting dumped here, or not dumped. I mean, he's not with her, but like the idea that there was even the possibility of this, Raven just fucking dumps water all over it.
I like that they all end up having these conversations about the hypothetical, like, if we met in a bar kind of thing.
Well, just outside the process. And I think that those kind of conversations probably happen in Bachelor as well. I mean, once they start getting to the end of the season, you start to see those conversations happening. Like, what is it going to be like in the real world when we're away from this? They say this, or call it the fairy tale or the whatever, the fantasy, you know? And I think for them, it's similar. The fantasy is developing an emotional connection with somebody that you don't know what they look like. Whereas in real life, that doesn't ever happen. The first thing you know about someone, generally speaking, is what they look like.
We then see an interesting series in which Cole basically tells a bunch of people that his fiance is not hot. He is first talking with Alexa and he says, I'm not in a place to say everything's perfect. Zenim's not the first girl I'd pick out of a crowd and say she's hot. I think she's hot now because I love her, but I'm not head over heels yet. And Alexa ITMs, I'm literally fucking dying. It was so weird. He's very open about it. I didn't even have to pressure for a conversation. A little tea session, I get all the tea. Ooh, Alexa is just scooping things up for her tea seller. Love watching Alexa play.
Yeah, she's a fantastic player. Cole is not. And it reminds me a lot of, like, there was an old series that I used to watch called Breaking Amish, where all the players on that show obviously didn't understand what reality television is and that you're being recorded constantly and that eventually the people you're on the show with are going to be able to watch back the things you do and say. I don't understand what Cole is doing here. It seems that he has no understanding, even on a rudimentary level, of what reality television is and that these things he's saying and doing are going to be captured on video, broadcast on Netflix, and then everyone he's talking about is going to watch that back. So let's say, I don't know how this ends. I'm unspoiled in terms of where Cole and Zainab are in the real world, but let's say they're married and happy, and then the show comes on, and she has to watch this shit. He's not aware that that would be the case. It really is fascinating to watch these early seasons of a new game where players just don't seem to understand that.
Yeah, there's a lot of references to Cole's filter, and we're definitely seeing that it is on no filter mode. He then talks to Colleen and he asks her if she has any reservations. And she's like, no, but I am worried. When are we going to find a hurdle? Because shit can happen in real life. Do you have reservations? Cole says, well, we have that emotional connection. We do have a physical connection, but it's not. Wouldn't have been the girl I picked in a room.
He's just using this phrase
again and again.
It's unreal.
And Colleen is like, who is your initial type? Cole says, you. And Colleen says, you'd be the person I'd go to in a bar. And he says, I'd approach you in a bar. I knew I'd be physically attracted to you. I knew you were cute. And she says, you're the person I'd be attracted to in the real world. And Cole goes underwater. And ITMs, Colleen is stressful because I like her. Loads love level one for Colleen. And the ITMs, he's trying to physically fall in love with Z, but he is already physically in love with Colleen.
That is something. I don't know what kind of love level that is. Physically in love with someone.
I've never heard that before.
What is that?
I don't know.
I think it's a new love level scale. It's the physical love level scale.
The lust scale. Yeah, because our love levels are more about emotional.
Yeah. What kind of physical love level? I physically really like you. You know, I think I'm physically starting to fall in love with you.
Emotionally, I think we're still level two. I could see myself falling, but physically, I am falling. So I am physically three.
I can feel myself physically falling, starting to physically fall in love with you, but I'm not quite there emotionally. I don't know. It's very confusing, but thank you, Cole, for this confusion.
And also, I would never date you if I saw you in a bar.
Right. You're not the type of person I would ever walk up to under any circumstances, except the one we find ourselves in right now, which I know is very strange. Then we get SK and Raven. They're getting massages. We've seen this date play out a million times in our beloved game. A masseuse tells them to breathe in the aroma of the oils they're using so that they can visualize some colors. Then this masseuse leaves Raven and SK alone with a bottle of chakra oil and the instructions to massage one another. And this masseuse was my...
Jorge Moreno, bystander of the week.
I love this type of date. This is a couple that has sexual tensions. They have not yet consummated. And so the producers set them up on this date where they're going to be massaging each other. Now, if these producers were a little better, if they had been in the game a little longer, instead of a mutual massage, this would have been...
human taco.
Yeah, human taco, human churro, or a full-on forced nudity, sitting in Kama Sutra poses type shit like that. They could have gone much further with this, but they did go pretty far with it here, and this masseuse was conscripted by the producers to help in that endeavor. Couldn't have loved that performance more by my Jorge Moreno.
And it was good play by SK. He's like, this comes with the package when he starts massaging her in this heart shape, which is the heart happens to be right near the cleave. And he has his shirt off. And Raven ITMs, yesterday we were talking about him bringing the energy. And now he is. Their sexual tension feels fiancé-licious.
And then they go to a hot tub. That massage, I guess, was too hot to handle. They need to wash off in this hot tub. She calls him an energy god, and she sings about him not going too far in the deep end. They talk some more about him being an energy god, and he tells her that engagement looks good on her. He thinks it's all coming together. He likes that they started off on a strong emotional connection. They gave their hearts to each other, and the future looks bright. Raven thinks it is fun to see them getting better every day, and he wouldn't want it any other way. And he says he doesn't want to pressure this or rush this. And I wrote, lol, they're getting married in a month. The whole show is about pressuring and rushing you into a marriage. That's what the whole thing is. And she says she's falling in love with him for sure. Love level 3. And she feels like she really loves him. Love level 4. He says, I love you too. Another love level 4 here. And we seal it with a kiss.
Nighttime. We are in Nancy and Bartice's room. They kiss. And Nancy asks about his talk with Raven. And he says, good. Seeing her in the flesh, it makes sense. You're fucking gorgeous. You're fit. We look good together to the naked eye. Look at us in any bar or restaurant. That would make sense. Obviously, we're this hot couple. our connection. But our connection is emotional, energetic, and fun. And she's like, mm-hmm. And she just says, like, she just groans one-word answers to him during this whole convo. And he's like, do you think Raven and SK would say yes? And Nancy's like, I think they will. And Bartice says, my biggest fear, we've fallen in love. So, okay, love level 4, kind of. He says, my biggest fear is that our love fizzles out. I can't identify the reason, but I've lost interest in every girl I was in love with. I'm worried it might fizzle out. I need to experience us in Dallas, not in this fairy tale. If we had a wedding right now, what is your answer? And she says, yes, a precog by Nancy. And Bartice is like, are you sure? We haven't even been through any challenge. You don't know how I'd react.
I know. It's like, Jesus, dude.
Okay, you're going to punch me in the face? What does that mean?
Bartice's, him and Cole are like on par for worst players of this season, I feel like. There is no conversation that they have that you are like, oh, this will go well. And then indeed it doesn't. He just keeps digging the hole deeper and deeper. But I will say, in terms of Nancy's reactions to this,
I think Bartice is doing like out of them too. I think Bartice is somehow being more charming.
Yeah, I agree with that. He comes off as just like a little naive, whereas Cole comes off as like sinister to me anyway. But I also don't think that Nancy's reactions to what he's saying, like, we're not getting this whole conversation. This is another conversation that is just chopped the fuck up. I don't know who's really saying what. I don't think any of these reactions that she was giving were the actual reactions she had in that conversation. Nonetheless, we move on. Right. Alexa and Brennan cheers in a pool at night. Alexa says they're the best. Brennan agrees. He's excited for the next step to not be in this situation, but to be in real life. He says they're in a dream. She thinks they're in the cool part, and taking him home will be him meeting her family. She's nervous about her family not understanding her decision, but she thinks they'll get through the family part. And she says, I kind of love you. That love level 3.5. I don't know.
She said 6 out of 8. I was like, I think that's 3.
Well, that's 3/4. 6 out of 8 is 3/4. So I'm saying low level 3, I guess.
If they were all equal between them, sure. Yeah. And he keeps saying, you're really hot, girl. She says, what's your biggest turn on, you girl? And they make out. They seem drunk.
Now, you, I want to ask you a question. You're Unspoiled. Have you read any of the news surrounding any of these people?
No.
Okay. And you want to keep it that way? We're covering the document only.
What do you mean?
Let's just keep it that way. We're going to cover the document only, and there may be things to talk about after we finish the whole season.
I'm sure there will be. I mean, I'm Unspoiled. I've really been doing Ghost Protocol on the news. I have my guesses about like who's going to stay together or not.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'll leave it to you to make the executive decision.
Let's keep it Unspoiled and just talk about gameplay. And then we'll, after we do the whole season, we can
Oh, God.
We can discuss things.
Oh, God. Wait, now you're scaring me.
I'm scaring you. It's nothing to be afraid of, I assure you. Zainab and Cole then are in bed.
There was a dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. And she asked him how his pool party was. These are forced conversations by the producers. We get a bunch of these conversations coming now in quick succession of all the couples. How was your pool party? How was it talking to those other people that the producers forced you to talk to? And then forced us to have this conversation about the forced conversations you had to have with those people in the pool. So she recounts the events of Cole coming over to her and she asked him to rate her. He gave her a 9 out of 10 and he gave Colleen and Raven a 10 out of 10. This was going to be my era of the game. Until something Bartiste does a little bit later. But he says then that he gives 80% of the woman in the world a 7 out of 10, but he gave her a 9 out of 10. So she should be grateful, essentially, here, digging the hole. Just
Cole giving his fiance a 9 out of 10, while two other women in the pod get a 10 out of 10. And he insults the fourth audience, saying that 80% of the women watching this, he would give less than a 7, was my
error of the game.
I mean, it's hilarious, but it's devastating and
yeah,
just.
But that's what I'm saying. Like,
I mean, there are a lot of errors this season, but
this motherfucker doesn't know what he's doing.
This relationship is the hardest for me to watch.
Fuck the relationship. This dude just said he gives 80% of the women in the world less than a 7 or a 7 or whatever. It's like, if this relationship doesn't work out for you, dude, that video clip is going to be playing in the mind of everyone you will ever date for the rest of your life if they've seen this show. It's insane what he's saying. It's absolutely fucking insane.
Would you not watch the show if you're dating the person? I mean, he's just digging himself in a bigger and bigger hole. And I know we're seeing a chopped up version of this, but it feels to me like Cole hates Zainab.
And is what? Trapped?
And is just like really trying to force this.
He's like, fuck it. I just got to make it to the end to get Instagram followers, you think? Or
that is just the impression. I feel the cringiest when I'm watching this couple. I feel like they're like the least likely to make it out of anyone, if I were to guess.
Yeah, I feel similarly. He's very hard to watch. But again, it is just like this game. And I know people get married and I know there's real emotion and there have been successful couples that are one successful couple, at the very least. I don't know if there are any more other than the first season, but
not that I know of.
It's just the unmitigated misunderstanding of the fact that he's on a reality television show that will be broadcast to everybody who has a Netflix subscription. That to me is mind blowing. Like, he doesn't seem to understand that with any of these things he's saying. And that's fascinating to me. It really is like we're in the early, early era of this game where these players are just fucking coming in, shooting from the hip. It doesn't matter. Outcome be damned. He does not give a shit. He's just going to insult every woman on the planet, basically.
It makes me think, like, I don't know, maybe you've never been filmed before or had like your exact words brought back to you, but like, it's, yeah. Zainab responds and is like, oh, I have self-esteem issues I have to work through, I guess, in response to this, which is also like a dig at him. I do feel like neither of them like each other that much. And Zainab, by chance, it's really crappy to hear the man you love and you're engaged to is like, I'm physically attracted to this girl. You're 9 out of 10, but she's 10 out of 10. I don't know if other women would receive that better than me. Hated hearing that.
But ultimately, as they lay in bed, he maintains that he's not confused about who he wants to be with, and she agrees that it's real. She doesn't doubt that there are real feelings between them, and she just wants him to tell her feelings change, and it's not going to work out that they could make that decision together. Those are her expectations from somebody she would love and respect. And ultimately, they come together, and he offers to never say anything like that again, the 9 out of 10 thing, and she says forever. She will then think it's bullshit, and he says great, because it is bullshit for any guy, unless you're married to Kim Kardashian, who you do look like, so we're close. This gets an audible groan from Zainab.
Close.
It was unfucking real. He turned a corner. He got back into this conversation, was like, look, you are the one. I'm 100% in. She says the same thing. And then he pulls out this Kim Kardashian shit. And you're just like, The man cannot get out of his own way. Can't, simply cannot.
No. No. Physically incapable. We then see this conversation between Colleen and Matt, recapping the all-player date. How was the Cole convo? And Colleen says, you know, I said you're a cute guy in real world, sure, but I don't know who that person is. Matt's like, I bet you didn't tell him that. I've been played before. You should have shut it down. I got my eyes on one girl. Colleen produces tears, goes in the bathroom crying. And Matt says, we have 4 weeks. You're telling people I'm attracted to you as an engaged woman, so fuck me, right? You're going to tell me you love me, but fuck me, right? Oh, God, I had this as my error also. Whatever, I'll give it to Cole. But his interrogation of Colleen, making her produce tears, was almost my error. The game, yelling at a woman until she cries, is just, it's never a good look, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll share your opinion. But okay. She does, at a certain point, say she only has eyes for him. And when she says this, Matt delivers a disgusted, suspicious, scrunched up face, and this gaze in response to Colleen's admission that she only has eyes for him was my
face play of the game.
This motherfucker is so drunk. Everything so that's drunk. Coming through his facial expression is 100% real emotion. And it's just a, oh, what are you saying to me? Like downturned corners of the mouth, eyes almost closed, just face. Oh, loved it. Absolutely loved it. Loved to see all the drunk stuff.
His PTC has been triggered.
Yeah.
Love to see all the drunk stuff. I do too. She's like, I'm fighting for you. And he says, you got eyes for one person. This is fucking ridiculous. I'm not going to get fucking played, Colleen. And she says, you're done. I didn't know how to respond. And he says, we're on two different pages. I'm out. And he leaves. And Colleen grabs her face between her two hands as Matt says, get this mic off me. And this gesture to accompany tears and elevate her victim edit was my
face play of the game.
A lot of strong face play this week by everyone, but this one I loved.
I did too. I loved this whole scene, and I thought it was a very strong end here where Matt storms off. He doesn't know if he can continue, and we cliffhang as Colleen is crying. We then begin episode 6. Nancy and Bartice have some self-shot video. Nancy's telling us that they're leaving. This is their last day in the honeymoon suites. Alexa and Brennan's self-shot video. She says, I found my cowboy, and says, you know what they say, save a horse. And then Brennan says, and ride me. And indeed, she laughs and likes this. Colleen then has some self-shot video with Matt. Or sorry, Matt's not there. She's self-shooting her own video. She says she was sad and emotional last night. Matt then self-shoots his own video. He says they were finally able to communicate the next morning after their fight, and they realized it wasn't as big an issue as they thought. I'm like, where's this fucking footage? Do we not get to see that? How the fuck do you come out of that?
Aren't they being filmed 24/7 at this point? Like, where is it?
But I bet that they both woke up and they were like, Jesus Christ, I was drunk as fuck. And she's like, yeah, me too. Okay, let's, you know, erase that. Do over. Mulligan.
Mulligan. Like, I'm going to get a schmishmorton. We get the a group brunch, and Dark Lords Lachey are back. And Nick Lachey says, how are these physical connections shaping up? And he rubs his hands together.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask you. Did you see that he was doing the hand rubbing?
Oh, I saw the hand.
Somebody else does the hand rubbing. Dark Lord Palmer.
It's hard to know what to do with your hands.
No, it isn't. If you're a Dark Lord, it's very easy. You rub them together maliciously in a sinister fashion that conveys that you love to visit suffering upon all the players that you are addressing.
Well, his dark wife, Vanessa Lachey, says, creepy Uncle Nick, and they leave it in the document. Matt admits to them they've had a rough patch, but Colleen says, more in love this morning than ever. And they kiss in front of the Dark Lords to be like, see, 4TRR. Raven says she's going to Google how to be Nigerian for dummies. And Nick Lachey announces, "We have your phones." And Vanessa says, "When your fiance is talking to you, look up." Nick says, "You're one to talk." Ooh, little banter there.
All scripted bits. But I did think this was very interesting. It is in stark contrast to our beloved game, which pretends that telephones don't exist. Yeah, pretends that.
Unless you're Ben Higgins trying to get that remote blessing.
Yeah, that's right.
Or Sweet Doves meeting Hannah Ann.
God. Or if you need to say hello to your children that you've abandoned for some time to go into the beloved game. But here, they make it a part of the show. They show you now we've sequestered these players during the pods. We've sequestered them during the honeymoon phase. But now that they're going into, in quotes, the real world, which is not actually true, they put them up in an apartment building. Nonetheless, they say, here, you get your phones back. So we get some idea that they can now communicate with the outside world again, and that the real, like, lockdown from that ability to connect the world is over. Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in.
Known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, Canopy is dermatologist recommended. This unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free, installation's a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement. Go to canopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, Gore listeners can use our code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. If you have sensitive skin, you're going to want to hear about OneSkin's scientifically proven topical supplements. This is face, eye, body, shield, and it can all be used with any of their other products, which are free from over 1,500 chemicals and preservatives that can make skin red, irritated, or itchy. Their products are safe for sensitive skin. It's just one of the reasons they've earned the Skin Safe seal of approval.
You got to keep that skin glowing if you want to be keeping up the level of face play that I've got going on. And OneSkin was founded by an all-woman team of scientists. Their products are backed by extensive lab and clinical data to validate their efficacy and safety on all skin types. Their topical supplements are the easiest way to keep your skin healthy and hydrated without the harsh ingredients or irritation found in other skincare products often. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code ROSES at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code ROSES. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support Gore and tell them that we sent you. Clues. Underwear drawers, they're not organized. They're like the Wild West, the final frontier of wardrobes. Mm. And there's no rhyme or reason to them. You got ones that are super old, different brands, etc. You don't know what to expect. But now I have felt the buttery soft comfort of Me Undies. And now I want to replace the whole drawer with Me Undies because those are my now go-to. I'm currently wearing their long sleeve shirt and my... which is not what this ad is about, but I am also wearing the super soft, sustainable modal fabric thong with no roll back waistband. You want that. You don't want it to be rolling. You don't want it to be showing. And I'm hooked. I don't want to wear anything else. It's all got to go now.
Well, this ad actually is kind of about that, Pace Case. Everybody knows MeUndies makes great underwear. It's in the name, MeUndies. But it's not just about underwear. You can explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and a whole bunch more. And their Move Me activewear collection is the softest activewear on the market. There's no doubt about it. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/roses. That's MeUndies.com/roses for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. Over. I found that interesting, mm-hmm. and I liked it.
They're slowly introducing like aspects of real life back for the players. We see Cole send a selfie. We see Nancy FaceTime Erin Dira, her mom. Bartiz says, "I'm in love with your daughter," to her. She asks about his race. He says, "Half black, half white, but I speak a little Spanish." And we see Raven and SK kiss. We cut to
after they do a secret handshake, by the way. Did you see that shit?
They're a fascinating couple.
Yeah, Raven and SK have a little handshake that they do with one another. And I think that they had a lot of plays that were left on the cutting room floor, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. This handshake thing, I think, was probably one of them. They must have done that multiple times, and we just never got to see enough of it. Would have loved to have seen more.
It's like Team Crab, Daniel Malpe.
Exactly. Release the crab tapes, release the handshake tapes. And then we see Cole and Xana doing some self-shot videos saying goodbye to Malibu. The couples are off main titles. And we see a bunch of Dallas landmark B-roll, including some dogs being walked. All of the couples move into the same apartment building, the Landmark, I believe it's called. And I'm assuming this is just for ease of shooting. And then we get some I Love Clevelanding as they all walk into their new apartments, astounded at how nice they are. Matt and Colleen kiss. Cole sniffs his own dirty clothing and then throws it on the floor. Xanab demands he put it in a laundry basket as they move in together. She reprimands him again for leaving things on the ground, and he tells her to chill. Once again, to your point, Pace Case, doesn't seem like they're a strong couple to me.
No. I believe maybe season one, they had to move into one of the people's places, but they changed it for season two to have these generic apartments. I don't know. We see Alexa and Brennan discuss closet space and kiss. Raven and SK jump on their bed, and Raven ITMs the goals to wait till marriage to consummate, but we might mess up. SK says, ready to go shopping at the Nigerian grocery store. And he tells her about his language called Yoruba and teaches Raven some phrases. We cut to Colt and Zenab's home. Cole likes their new rug. He is making snow angels in it. And she says, well, this is what a rug is because you don't have any furniture. He says it's because he's a boy while he's on the carpet.
I mean, and I guess he's being like a sarcastic asshole to her or whatever. But again, there's a guy with a camera standing 3 or 4 feet away from you. The intent of this person with the camera is to record what you're doing and saying and then put it into, again, a TV show that's going to be on Netflix.
Maybe he's Amish.
He doesn't understand technology. What is that guy holding? It's just unreal. At every turn, this guy is saying stuff that just makes him seem worse and worse. Sometimes at the cost of Xanab, here at the cost of himself. But she does say he has some trainability, and then they sit on a couch and speculate that they're going to do better in this apartment than they did in Malibu. They're stronger now after having thought about what it would be like to lose each other. So they're together out of fear. They are both excited for this part, and Xanab then says she thinks it's going to be really healthy. Cole raises his eyebrows to the heavens in a kind of, you bet your ass it's going to be healthy smirk. And we get, maybe now they're going in the right direction. Xanab then ITMs that they've overcome a lot, and she asked him on the plane to go their separate ways if he didn't see it, and they decided to keep going. She's still the girl from the pods, and they're going strong now. Cole then tells Xanab that he called his family, and they don't understand what he's doing. Doesn't make sense to them. They're not for it, so he's not going to be able to get their approval. There is no blessing coming from Cole's side of the family. Not only that, we learn later that they're not even going to be in the show, or they might be at the end. Who knows? Maybe they're setting us up for that, but at least at this point, that seems to be the case. Xanab says it breaks her heart, and Cole thinks his family thinks he's making a mistake. We then get some hard rock music with lyrics. The lyrics are, everything comes crashing down, and then we get Nancy and Bartiz. She tells him her hairs are going to be everywhere. She's a little messy, and Bartiz says he's only had guy roommates, but he's not nervous about living with a woman. She doesn't think they're going to have any problems, but you never know. And she says she'll teach him some things, and he'll be fine. He's excited, and we get a little kiss here. They get in bed together, and he demands that she snuggle up to him, which she does.
I mean, leading into the meetings of the family, I think this is why the meetings of the family are my favorite part of Love is Blind, because it is this wild card in a very similar way that 90 Day Fiancé is, where it's like they can go on doing whatever they're doing, but then they have to introduce them to their family and be like, oh yeah, I'm marrying this person in 90 days who's from another country, who might have ulterior motives. Who knows? Like, it just, it really elevates the stakes for me in a very exciting way.
Because it also isn't as established. It's like, Love is Blind is a big show now, and it's going into season, this is season three, it'll have many more seasons. But it's not like The Bachelor. If you said, like, I met this person on The Bachelor, I think most families have an immediate understanding of like, oh, that show's been on for 20 fucking years. It has this legacy. Maybe you'll be a big influencer out of it. It's a different thing. This show is still like, wait a minute.
I mean, we still see some no blessings on Bachelor. Justin Glaze, his parents didn't come.
But we get a Chiron that says 19 days until the weddings. And we see Raven and SK together. She demands that he gets out of bed, and SK ITMs that the Sunday night streets of Dallas were calling him, but he ignored the call because he's an engaged man now. And he's not going to say exactly what happened that morning, but it was great. That's all he's going to say. To me, that's an implied consummation.
Implying consummation. That's
okay.
Yeah. And Raven also says that she is not happy about the loud neighbors and also about SK making loud calls to Nigeria. And he's like, they don't understand the time difference. She love level fours him, like as if he couldn't answer he had to answer.
Yeah.
He doesn't answer the Dallas streets calling, but he does answer Nigerian family and friends calling. She love level fours him and she says, I love you, but I love my sleep more. Is that a love level five for sleep? I don't know. Goose swims by. We see Nancy's 100K rental home, which she tells Bartice she rents for $6,000 to $9,000 a month. And she shares 2/5 of her properties with her ex. And Bartice ITMs that she hid how involved her ex is, thought it was just the realtor. He asks if she trusts him since both of their names are on the mortgage. And Nancy says she only buys a place if she has 6 months in savings to cover, wants to buy the next place with him. And he ITMs he's beginning in his career and doesn't have $3,000 lying around.
But also there's a point in this where like Bartice seems kind of like pissed off, like, oh, you're splitting all these things with your ex and how involved is this ex? And then she's like, look, if we're married, everything's 50-50. If I make $200,000, we make $200,000. And Bartice goes, holy shit, we make $200,000? His eyes light up at the prospect of this new revenue stream and all of his concerns about the husband or the ex-husband or whatever being part of her business. He's just like, fuck this shit. And I think that, to me, that was one of the funniest Bartice moments where he was like, well, wait a minute. You're saying your ex-husband is still in on these properties with you? And she's like, yeah, but if we're married, like, you'll be in on all the properties too. And if I make $200,000, you'll make $200,000. And he's like, holy shit, I'll make $200,000.
Bartice the accountant doing his numbers work. We cut to Alexa and Brennan. We are in Alexa's house and we meet a tiny white puppy named Tito, who is so excited for them to come home, and later drops a toy while learning of Bartice's $32,000 in student loans. And that's why Tito, the little white pup, was my... creature of the week. Cute, dramatic, everything you want in a creature.
Alexa's dog Tito was strutting his stuff. Tito knew they were coming to film this hometown. Tito knew he was about to get some screen time, and he didn't disappoint. Walks right up to both of them, jumps basically into her arms, and sits on the couch with them as they discuss where they're going to live and how they're going to pay for it. Beautiful work, Tito. You got my...
creature of the week.
And then Brennan explains that he can't afford the penthouse and he has these student debts. And Alexa basically says, this is how I live. And Brennan explains that he wouldn't have eaten sometimes as a child if it weren't for his grandparents. He plays this PTC here. And she says she wants to get a house in a year. They both think that's realistic. She wants to have a prenup. He says, you have more money than I do. That's obvious. And he says, whatever you want to put in the contract, I'll sign it. And then she says, what would be in your contract? And he says, it only has to say that you love me. Really playing some 4TRR plays here. Mm-hmm. But he admits that his job is not his life. He wants to be able to coach his kids in sports. He wants to always sit down as a family to dinner, whether they're talking or not. Education is really the only thing that's an absolute for him. And then he says they will punish their children if they do poorly in school. And Brendan plays this accidental PTC when he admits that his dad used to take his door off the hinges as punishment when he was a kid. And she says, that's very strange. And he assures her there's a lot more strange stuff to come. And we can't discuss this. Not yet, but perhaps we will.
Clues.
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
That's a little teaser. It's just all a teaser.
Okay. Okay, I'm guessing it has to do with Alex and Brennan. We then get our first meeting of the family. It's SK's mom, Aide, and brother, AB. Raven says she's about to shit herself before this, Nancy style. And SK introduces her to his mom and brother, and they show her how to swallow this traditional Nigerian dish whole. And Aide's the mom asks why Raven picked SK. Raven says, at first he was a nerd slash square, but then it got better and better. And we have the same lifestyle. We're both motivated. And he's basically an onion with layers. And bomb drop, her parents aren't coming to the wedding. No blessing for SK. She says that they're skeptical. And SK assures his family that they're going to incorporate Nigerian traditions into the wedding. He's going to wear an Agbada to the wedding, and they're merging their cultures. And Raven gets that mom blessing. The mom ITMs, I love her.
And she also says that her only concern is that Raven's parents aren't going to be there. I thought Raven played this first hometown of season three absolutely impeccably. She's eating the food. Yes. She says it's good. She has made a connection with the mom. And this hometown play, this dinner eating of traditional Nigerian food by Raven, was my
play of the game.
This was my runner-up, but it was so good.
It was beautiful.
Because, I mean, she's dropping a bomb in here. No blessing. No blessing possible. Won't be at the wedding. She manages to make it all come around. They are all going to feel like one happy family. Incredible play.
I think she's a great player overall, and I thought this was one of her best plays all season. Then we cut to Nancy and Bartice. They pull up to a house for what is the second hometown here. Nancy ITMs that Bartice is going to be meeting her mom and dad ultimately. Dad first here, and she wants her family to be at ease and feel like she's making the right decision. The worst thing that can happen is they disapprove of the engagement. She doesn't want her brothers to get into a brawl with Bartice, she says. And I'm starting to feel tones of Desiree Hartsock in season 17, Golden Boy Sean Lowe of The Bachelor, when her brother told Sean Lowe that he was a playboy. I'm starting to feel that creeping in a little bit.
That's weird, because I was feeling overprotective bro walls like JoJo Fletcher's brothers on her hometown date.
Oh, those two. Yeah. But Steve opens a bottle of wine as he says he has a lot of questions for Bartice. And then we get this two-on-one with Bartice and Nancy's brothers, Jesus and Steve. Jesus needs to know more about Bartice, so he doesn't feel like he's talking to a little kid, he says. Bartice assures him, I'm on my second career. Financial due diligence, says a lot of very adult-sounding words here. And then Steve asks, why does he think Nancy's the one? And Bartice says he feels like he would be happy with her for a long time. Steve says, that explanation is a little bland. Nothing special. Fucking love that line. And then Steve says, look, dude, she brings out the best in everyone, strangers and all. Bartice says he's emotionally unavailable except with Nancy. He's gotten to know her better than anyone he has ever known. And Steve presses the issue here. He outlines a theoretical scenario in which Nancy gains 400 pounds. And then with a straight face, he asks Bartice if he would still love Nancy with this theoretical 400-pound weight gain. And Bartice says, God, he won't lie. Physical attraction is a part of it. And he takes care of his body. And he hopes his future wife would take care of hers as well. And Steve sees his opening. Wait, future wife? You mean my sister? Bartice pushes back. Well, I haven't said yes to her yet. He says he would hope that he's got a deep enough relationship that he could tell her to go on a diet. And Bartice's unmitigated mishandling of the 400-pound hypothetical weight gain attack by Nancy's brother Steve was my
error of the game.
No idea what the fuck he's doing here. I don't think he has any idea what the fuck he's doing here, but all of this is wrong. I don't care if she gains 10,000 pounds. I'm going to love her till the day she fucking dies. And then even after that, I'm going to love her. That's all you ever say in a situation like this. Are you kidding me?
In no world should you be meeting your fiance's family for the first time and talking about how one day or possibly you might make her go on a diet. It's this should have been my error in the game also. A lot of errors this week. Good Lord.
And then also like, well, look, I would hope that my future wife would go on a diet if I asked her to. And it's like, no, we're literally talking about my sister, though. The person sitting in the next room. This isn't like a theoretical future somebody, whatever, you know. It's a
right.
An actual person. He's just like every turn of this conversation he handles completely incorrectly.
Yeah, they don't really give him the blessing, at least that we see in the document. We then...
No. Jesus even says, look, I'm looking forward to new beginnings and everything. And if my sister approves, I'm not just going to fold, he says, and be okay with this. I still am going to need to hang out with you more. He explicitly does not give a blessing. He says, I didn't get a good enough fucking read on you from this little conversation, dude.
We then see the second half of this meeting of the family. They go to Nancy's mom's house, Arandira, a.k.a. Eddie. And mom immediately asks about the sparklers, carrots, and also Nancy's friends are there as well. And they ask Bartice about what made him fall for Nancy. And he has, you know, sort of, this is his second draft. He says, first her laugh, and then we became best friends. And the mom plays a, how will you support my daughter? And Bartice says, well, I have 12K in student debt for the master's and 2K car debt. The mom reveals she has had a bail bond business for 15 years and she can read lies. Nancy laughs. She works with criminals. I liked this family play.
Me too.
We see Zainab and Cole then. It is the Zainab meeting of the family. It is her mom and stepbrother, her stepmom, Beverly, who's been her legal guardian since Zainab was 13. Beverly thinks that it's very vulnerable to go into the game and that she's been praying for them, loves that they share faith. And she says that she asked her son, how do you see this woman becoming your queen, about him getting married? And Cole says, yes, we communicate even if we're in a fight, but my parents are mad at me. And the mom pulls Cole and asks about faith. Cole reveals that his mom's dad was a Baptist preacher.
PTC, in my opinion.
Roasted. Well, Beverly says that Zainab will assume that the family not coming is based on race. And she adds, you know, backstory to Zainab's PTC of her parental death. She says that one day Zainab cried when she realized she'd known her stepmom longer than her mom. And Beverly says she's probably extra hurt because she wants your parents to be hers. This is heartbreaking.
Absolutely. This was a PTC being played for Zainab basically by her stepmom here. But it does give us a lot of insight into potentially things about Zainab's personality. And he assures, Cole assures Beverly that once they can get through this, his parents will love her. And he says their love is real. And Beverly initiates a literal Christian prayer to protect their hearts and feelings as she invokes Jesus Christ himself. Powerful Christian parental play here. And so far on all these hometowns, I got to say, all the parents are knocking it out of the park. They're all absolutely fantastic. And siblings and all of it. Absolutely love it.
They're doing all the attacks. Like, it's great. I loved when Bartice was getting, they were doing the too young to be serious. They were doing all the attacks.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
We then go to SK showing Raven his house, and he shows a decor thing that is for, I guess, spirits or something, waving away bad spirits.
He also has he's got a picture of himself as a baby on his refrigerator. I found that interesting. I was like, I don't think I have any pictures of myself as a baby anywhere. Do you have any pictures of yourself as a baby just like around your home?
I mean, at my parents' house, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, but I've seen them on a lot of dating profiles, too.
Oh, it's interesting.
It's a thing. I don't know. But Raven talks about the excess of velvet. He's wearing velvet. There is velvet furniture in her ITM. And he says that his lease is up in September. Raven says she likes living near the mall and her job, doesn't like commuting, doesn't want for him to keep his apartment. Is that right?
Well, she says there's no reason for him to keep his apartment if he's going to be going to school. And they get into this little conversation about her not wanting to change her lifestyle, basically, while he has to go be a student. And he's essentially saying, you know, she wants to be able to get facials and massages and things like this, personal training. And he's essentially saying, I will live sparse and I will take care of my own shit. She then drops the bomb on him. I also expect you to pay half of my rent. I found that very bold, a very strong play. He will not live there. He's going to be living in California. She's just like, but you're going to pay half of my fucking rent in Dallas. But SK basically says he's good to take care of whatever they decide to split as far as bills, and he's fine taking care of his own school expenses and everything.
She also quotes A Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and says, it can be expensive to be me.
And SK ITMs that he can't provide financially until he's done with school, and she won't compromise on things until then. So looks like there might be some trouble around this. And we get a Chiron 15 days until the weddings. We're back with Nancy and Bartice. They're doing laundry, and she says she tried his method of dumping everything in all at once with the socks, but if they're munchy, she has to unmunch them. Very cute wordplay here. And they talk about chores a little bit. And then they both agree that they're on board to have a nanny if they have kids or when they have kids. And then they start talking about timeline for kids. He says 2 to 4 years is the minimum for him. And she says that she has to consider her age. The older you get, the more likelihood there is for birth defects. And she asks what he would do if his child had a birth defect.
She basically says you're more likely to have birth defects older. Bartice said, I didn't know that was a thing. My mom was 36 when she had me. And Nancy asks, like, oh, would you abort a kid if there was a problem? And Bartice says, fuck no, whether it's boy, girl, trans, three legs, doesn't matter. And Nancy says, it's different for me. I've seen so much. I would cry every day. She says that Down syndrome has so many complications, and she's seen the trauma that it does to a family. And she says basically that she would get an abortion if she knew she could try again. Bartice says, I basically could never get an abortion. I could never, but if it's unplanned, you get one pass. if you're not financially ready for it and you're young, but you can't do it again. And Nancy's like, well, what if the second time you get raped? What if the third time they poked a hole in the condom to get you pregnant on purpose? And Bartista's like, those make sense. But that's not like unplanned. And he basically is going through all of these things. And Nancy's like, what about this? And she keeps her cool about this situation in a way I could never see myself keeping it cool. She asked about plan B. He says, plan B is different. I've bought plan B.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, if it's something I've done a bunch, then it's fine.
If it's something I've done a bunch, or if it's the one mulligan schmishmortion. And Nancy basically says, I have no say in anyone's body. If you need an abortion, have it. I wish my parents had been more comfortable talking about sex. I probably wouldn't have had sex so young if I had. I loved this conversation because you literally never see the word abortion on Bachelor. It is a huge fucking issue. It is a huge issue that couples do have to talk about if they are having sex.
Well, especially now, especially in fucking Dallas, Texas, of all places.
Nancy says, thank you for listening. Thanks for being open. And ITMs that he appreciates her beliefs. His mind being open makes me feel like I chose right. And Nancy's handling of this abortion conversation was my
play of the game.
I react so strongly when I see, you know, interviews with voters, especially male voters, who basically admit that they don't understand anything about abortion mm-hmm. or about women's bodies or anything, and think like you need one tampon for a period and all this other, like, obviously have no clue. And it's like, oh, they're voting for people who are deciding about abortion. And it's like, they're horrifying pieces of media.
Yeah.
And so, well, I mean, watching this conversation, it's hard for me to watch because it's like, Bartista doesn't seem like he has thought about this for very long, as there's like Nancy's poking holes left and right. And so I just really appreciated how she handled it. And she didn't come off like she was like super judging him for like not really understanding some of this stuff.
Totally.
I just really appreciated this conversation and being on here.
No, I agree. This is a strong conversation for any reality TV show, let alone, I mean, you're comparing it to Our Beloved Game. Obviously, it would never be in there. But this is something that mm-hmm. couples in the year 2022 have these fucking conversations. This is a part of coming together as a couple. You have to be aligned on certain ideologies around issues just like this. Or at the very least, you have to be open to somebody else's ideology if it's different than yours.
For couples where pregnancy is possible.
Exactly. Like, is this the type of conversation that Our Beloved Game players have in the fantasy suite? Is this like the type of conversation that maybe got Zach Shallcross kicked out of Rachel Recchia's top three? I don't know.
He's like, only one mulligan per. And she's like, abortion shouldn't come in mulligans. It is healthcare. Anyway.
But this kind of stuff, honestly, like, this is when I think, especially dating games, dating game formats, it's when reality TV is at its best. Mm-hmm. When you have this conversation that may be edited, I mean, for sure is edited, maybe Frankenbitten, maybe it's, you know, they're forced into the conversation, maybe it's stilted a little bit, but nonetheless, what they're conveying in this show is a couple navigating a very serious issue that will affect them both or could potentially affect them both in the future of their relationship. One that is kind of paramount to talk about, along with religion and politics and all these other things. And you just never see that shit in The Bachelor or really any network TV show. You're only going to get this on a streaming show. I loved it.
Yeah, me too. We cut to Alexa's dad's house for the meeting of the family. Brennan ITMs, he's nervous. We meet Morgan, Alexa's stepmom, and Adam, Alexa's dad, and a child, Emma, who's in earmuffs, which are unexplained. And there's a ton of people here. And they have drinks. They call certain things the grilling seats. Brennan does an interesting play here where he reveals that it's his birthday, which I thought was interesting. I'm like, I mean, I'm sure it is his real birthday, but I'm like, that is a good thing to do, to be like, oh, well, you can't go in on me too hard. Birthday play.
Yeah, it is. The birthday shield. I love it as well.
Say L'chaim to his birthday.
And then Alexa's dad asks what they bonded over. He says family and respect. They have the same sense of humor. She's charismatic and an alpha, he says. She has a tough exterior, but's a good person, and he's super in love with her. She feels secure and comfortable around him, she says. She recaps that they like the same foods and they like to cook. And Brennan says he thinks the best way to learn about culture is through food. And then Alon, Alexa's cousin, asks about the difference in religion. And Brennan says he's open to taking classes about Judaism. But her dad says that they're really Israeli before they are Jewish. Israeli is a culture. Jewish is a religion, he says. And Alexa's dad asks how many girlfriends he's had that have been serious. He says his longest relationship was 3 years. He was almost married. He's been on some dates since. And he's calling everyone ma'am and sir at this point. And Alexa's dad is like, you have to stop with the sir shit. But then Alexa's like, no, I like it. It's cute. I think it's good. It's a sign of respect. And her dad asks about his money and ambitions. And he says he's a water treatment engineer. He loves the job. And he has a vehicle. He makes that clear. He says, I don't have a car. But then he makes it clear, I do have an SUV, though. We get some suspenseful music, and Alexa's dad says that Alexa's not a simple girl. They split into genders as Alexa says, this is me throwing you to the wolves. So all the women leave the room together, leaving Brennan with her father and I guess the other guys. And as the women are leaving, Alexa's dad says, from what I know about Alexa, she's not going to stay married to a chump. And then that's the end. We cliffhang there. Is the dad foretelling some kind of future calamity in this relationship? But that's it. That's episode 5 and 6. Pace Case, who was your MVP for these two episodes?
For her perfectly played meeting of the family, extracting that love level 4 from SK's mom, Raven was my
MVP.
Who was yours?
For extracting the level 4 from SK's mom, for eating the Nigerian food, for doing everything she is doing all along the way of this game.
Yeah, colorful narration.
Colorful narration, forcing SK to get out of bed and do workouts. For everything she's done so far, Raven was also my
MVP.
I just think that she's outstanding, and I'm very curious to see what she does in the rest of this game. But that wraps it up. That's episode 5 and 6 of Love is Blind, season 3. Thank you for joining us for our recap of it. We hope you have enjoyed it, and we will be back Friday with This Week in Bachelor Nation. There's a lot to cover, including our responses to getting to go to Stefan Lovegrove's Noel Ball. Still can't believe we did that. Mm-hmm. It was a surreal night, to say the least. A living dream.
Yes. I like to call it a fever dream because I felt just like it was all of these worlds colliding. Yeah. And I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. But we will get into that for our State of the Game. State of Game of Roses at the Noel Ball. In the game. You know, I would argue that the Noel Ball is part of the game.
It's part of the parasocial game for sure.
If you didn't check out, we had a Digging Deeper that came out this week as well with fascinating tids. Just go to patreon.com/gameofroses and check out that that chunk of the back catalog. See where it all began.
And before we go, as always, what is that drawback?
It has been 7,568 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be, Dark Lord Palmer.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us. And then